Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and now we continue our Project Price Check NYC. WNYC and Gothamist are working with the group Clear Health Costs to try and add clarity to the question of what and how we pay for healthcare. But one of the effects of the COVID-19 pandemic is that most of us are staying away from doctors and medical facilities, except maybe the ones offering free coronavirus testing, as much as we can. But that can come with risks to our health, to avoid the risk of exposure to the virus, and with risks to many primary care and other non-urgent but really needed practices. So let's talk about the effects on medical care. Let's talk about the effects on medical providers with your phone calls and with Jeannie Pinder, founder and CEO of Clear Health Costs, and Caroline Lewis, lead reporter of Price Check NYC and a regular contributor to Gothamist on Caroline's recent reporting with Clear Health Costs on this. Caroline and Jeannie, welcome back to the Brian Lehrer Show.
Thanks. It's great.
Thanks for having us.
And Caroline, I'm going to jump right to the headline of your Gothamist article, Struggling Medical Offices See Some Light at the End of the Tunnel as New York City Reopens. Can you put some numbers or some prose on how much medical practices have been struggling?
So, as you said, early on in the pandemic, a lot of people were told to avoid going to the doctor. And so a lot of them shifted to telemedicine instead, but that didn't necessarily pay the same amount. And a lot of practices had to close temporarily or reduce hours. I think a quarter of practices in one survey from the State Medical Society said that a quarter of practices had to lay off 50% or more of their staff. A lot of them lost a lot of the patient volume, even with telemedicine. One practice I profiled, South Slope Pediatrics, had 25% of its usual patient volume, at the height of the pandemic. And now that's gone up a little bit to around 65%. But I think that a lot of practices still feel like they're really on uncertain footing.
Now, listeners, help us report this story. Help Jeannie and Caroline report this story. Call us at 646-435-7280 or tweet at Brian Lehrer to help with sussing this out. On the patient side, have you been back to any of your regular doctors for non-emergency care yet or for non-COVID care, let's say, of any kind? Did you try telemedicine during the outbreak? How did that work for you? When would you be ready to go back to a clinic or a doctor in person if you haven't yet? 646-435-7280. Does anyone listening right now think you actually got COVID-19 from an unrelated medical visit? Parents or of children or any kinds of patients, call in with your stories. 646-435-7280. 646-435-7280. Some of you know that I was out for some emergency dental work a couple of weeks ago. And was I afraid after that I was going to get COVID-19 from going to the dentist? Yes. I'm more than 2 weeks out now, so I guess I'm okay. But frankly, it could be pretty terrifying. And from the medical practice side, we want to hear from you too. Doctors, other healthcare workers, are you having financial pressures as a result of the pandemic? And what are you saying to your patients about reopening? 646-435-7280, 646-435-7280. Jeannie, for people who know Clear Health Costs, you're very data-driven as well as story-driven. You're constantly collecting stories from people about what they really pay for medical care. What kind of stories have you been collecting around this?
Well, I can tell you my own personal story. I had a hip replacement at Montefiore New Rochelle on March 13th, huh, which, as you remember, was the very beginning of the lockdown. People told me that I probably shouldn't have done it, but I went ahead and did it because the doctor said, well, we have a clean ward. Our operating room is separate from the rest of the hospital. So I went ahead and had this surgery March 13th. They did close down his elective surgery 4 days later. I came home on lockdown, and I really felt like it wasn't a risky thing because they did have a clean ward. It turned out that a month and a half later, I did test positive for coronavirus antibodies.
Antibodies.
I never really felt like I was sick. I had one day where I woke up. I was post-op, right? So I had one day where I woke up, I felt like I'd been hit by a truck, muscle aches and pains. But I didn't really have any of the respiratory stuff that we've come to think of as the sort of common symptoms. At this juncture, I've now tested positive 3 times for antibodies and negative once. Did I get it in the hospital? I don't know. But yeah, you know, after that, I was recommended to do physical therapy. I didn't do it because we're on lockdown. So I didn't actually go into the physical therapy provider. I'm about ready to go back now, but, you know, that's a story. It's not really data, but it's a story about what happened to one person with medical treatment in coronavirus era.
And I hear the sound of so many heads nodding out there. Not that everybody had hip replacements, but with whatever it was that they feel like they needed to go in for or that they've avoided getting in for, going in for, and, you know, wondering how much those underlying conditions are being exacerbated for a lack of attention. Sarah in Huntington, you're on WNYC. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So I am currently sitting outside my allergist's office, and I haven't been here since March. And I'm looking forward to having my shots done, but I had to stop treatment because Huntington was a hotspot, and I was very scared of going in after about 3 weeks of getting phone calls from the allergist saying that I should come in and not miss my doses. They assured me that they were going to take all the procedures and all the cautions really necessary to avoid having a lot of people in the office. But then the week that I called to schedule, I received a voicemail saying that the office was going to be shut down for 2 weeks due to a COVID episode. So I haven't been back. My allergies are really bad, but I wanted to avoid it. So I spoke with a friend who's an allergist in New York City, in the Bronx, another hotspot, and she told me to go back and take my risk, you know, wear my N95, make sure I'm not in a crowded room, but that I should get back on it because I'm, you know, having a tough time with allergies.
It's risk versus risk. And I'm curious, Sarah, what your allergist is telling you now about precautions in the office. Like when I went to the dentist, there was a whole list of things that the dentist offices were, you know, starting to communicate with people about their cleaning practices and other stuff. Have you gotten anything like that?
So it was just that one phone call that I had, you know, telling me that they were going to take everyone's temperature, everyone's to wait in the car. They will call you when your turn's ready. They're going to have 1 to 2 people in the office waiting room, and that, you know, they ask if you've traveled or not. The major concern that I have, and I have had for this time, is that the office is shared with a doctor's office, the waiting room area. And so people are usually going to the doctor sick. People are going to the allergist, not necessarily. But I'm looking forward to going in and getting out as soon as possible. It's my first time going back into a doctor's office. And things are really slowed down in Huntington. So we're hoping that this is like a quick thing and
good,
I can go good back
luck.
In.
You know,
thanks
I
so
wonder,
much.
Thank you. I wonder if it's just allergy shots, if they could set up a tent outside, just a thought. Mary Alice in East Flatbush, you're on WNYC. Hi, Mary Alice.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning to you.
I was scared to go to the doctor, too. but I had an issue and it was painful. So in April, I called my primary care physician. I got a telemedicine appointment, and the long story short is that telemedicine is a big problem. The doctor called me, said he sent me a link by text to click through, and then I would have a video conference with him. And when I clicked through the link, there was a pop-up that said Chrome required permission to record the audio and video of my session with my doctor. So I clicked through it and then had the session, and then afterwards I thought, well, wait a minute, Google, Chrome, they're data mining people's health data because they're getting the recording of the actual session, which is a violation of HIPAA, number one. But number two, Google data mines too much. So the next week when I had another doctor's appointment, I refused to use the app. The app was Doxyme, D-O-X-Y-M-E, and on its website it says that, you know, something innocuous, but the bottom line is that in order to use the app, you are required to allow Chrome to audio and video record your session with your doctor. So I asked my state elected officials if they could make that illegal, because... But I haven't, you know, they've been working on so much other stuff. But it needs to be illegal for Chrome to require that they audio or video record a telemedicine session with your private doctor.
That and is so, go ahead.
Telemedicine.
Mary Alice, thank you so much for revealing that. So, Caroline or Jeannie, have either of you heard of this before, permission being asked for by Chrome, which is Google, not by the medical provider, to record the session? Do you think they're data mining our telehealth sessions, and would that be in violation of HIPAA? Is this news to you?
Well, this particular incident that she experienced with the app is news to me, but I do know that in general, regulations around telemedicine have been relaxed a little bit during the pandemic in order to encourage more people to use it and make it easier for doctors to use. And so they're using all different types of apps, and definitely apps that they wouldn't normally be using in, you know, strict HIPAA compliance circumstances necessarily. And I think that a lot of doctors and patients are saying they want to continue to have the option of telemedicine moving forward, but there's a lot of things that need to be worked out, both around, you know, how it's paid for by insurance and also what the rules are so that patients feel safe using it, and so that it's also sort of balancing, you know, making it easy to access for patients and also, you know, secure.
Let's take a call. Go ahead, Jeannie, go.
What we've heard here is that both patients and doctors were hugely surprised to find that they actually enjoyed telemedicine in large portion. This is not this particular app, which is a story that I've never heard of this. But patients and doctors said that they were pleasantly surprised to know that they could actually have a doctor's visit that didn't involve somebody, you know, taking a half a day off of work to go sit in somebody's office and then get seen for 5 minutes. So we'd like to think that there's going to be more telemedicine options, but as Caroline pointed out, the payment thing is a huge obstacle. Insurance companies need to learn how to pay for it, and doctors need to learn how to get paid for it. So, the data mining thing surprises me, but it doesn't completely surprise me.
Yeah, and you know, we can never vouch for what any single caller says some person or organization is doing, you know, without confirming it as journalists, but it's now certainly something that's on our radar screen to look for. If it's saying Chrome is asking for permission to record, and that's what our caller saw. Jill in Bergen County, you're on WNYC, a pediatrician, I see. Doctor, thank you for calling in.
You're welcome. Good morning, Brian. Yes, I'm a pediatrician in a seven pediatric physician practice in Bergen County, which, as you know, was a big hotspot. Quite a whirlwind for us. We had four physicians contract COVID in March. and several nurses. We think that was from an influx of college students coming home from spring break before we really knew the seriousness of the pandemic. So the office was closed for about 10 days and then reopened. And I wanted to comment because one of your speakers said that pediatricians' visit volume went down to like 25% of normal. We were very, very proactive with our practice and our patients to try to prevent that from happening. We did, obviously we were closed, but when we reopened, we were very concerned about parents delaying coming in with infants and young children for immunizations, and this has been a big problem across the country. And the American Academy of Pediatrics has really, been trying to educate people not to delay, because we don't need to have epidemics of measles and whooping cough on top of COVID-19. So I think the success in my practice was, one, communication. We have a lot of push-out emails to people, and we have a big social media presence where we communicated with people. And we also had our staff, some of whom were working from home and some of whom were working from the office, calling patients and telling them what we were doing in the office to make sure that their children were safe, but that we really wanted them to come in and get their well visits done on time. And over a few weeks, we brought our visit volume up to about 60 to 65% of normal. And part of the reason that the visit volume is down is that when people were in lockdown, kids were not getting sick. I mean, we usually see kids with fever and strep throat and everything, but during lockdown, kids weren't getting sick.
Because they weren't all over each other like usual.
Correct. They weren't in daycare. They weren't in school. They weren't playing with each other. So they just weren't getting the normal viral illnesses. So then as lockdown loosened a little bit in New Jersey, we were starting to see it. And some of the essential workers' children were still in daycare. And we have a lot of nurses and doctors who bring their kids to us. So we made sure that for the kids that needed to be seen in the office, which weren't that many, we did do a lot of telemedicine, and I can comment on that too. We did it from 4 o'clock on, so at the end of the day. So all the healthy children were seen early in the day, and mm-hmm. then sick children were seen one by one. Parents mm-hmm. had to call when they arrived at the parking lot and seen one by one, and then we had our cleaning crew come in and do thorough cleaning at the end of the day so that the office would be, you know, immaculate for the next morning.
What did you do between sick kids?
So between sick kids, we did the CDC recommendations. All the medical assistants and nurses were spraying down the entire exam room with seticide and other antiviral wipes, and a room was left to air out so that there weren't continuous people going in. Mm-hmm. We also had specific rooms just for well visits and specific rooms just for sick visits.
Really interesting.
Everyone was very happy, and we've had a lot of positive feedback from our patients.
What was it you were going to say about telehealth? I'm curious.
So telehealth, very, very interesting. We have been pushing. I've been involved with the American Academy of Pediatrics nationally and in New Jersey for getting telehealth paid. And up until the pandemic, the insurance companies weren't listening to us. Or if they were, we had to use their platform, which therefore they were benefiting from financially. And so it never took off. Then with COVID, there was a lot of push right away to get parity for telehealth. So that means that we get paid for a telehealth visit exactly the same as if the patient was seen in the office. Now, we think that's going to go away. And if it goes away, it's going to be a big problem. But it was originally supposed to end June 30th. And it's been extended, at least in New Jersey, until September 30th. And my guess is it will need to be extended further. And AAP is pushing that this continue. And the patients love telehealth. You can't do it for everything, but it's been mm-hmm. a huge help with all the mental health problems we're seeing in kids right now. So we can talk to parents and talk to kids through telehealth and help work through some of those problems and make appropriate referrals. We can get great pictures that patients email to us, and we can diagnose rashes over the phone and things like that. And we always triage sick kids with fever. We do a telemedicine visit first, try to figure out what's going on, and then decide whether the patient needs to come in to have any testing done or whether it can wait and just have some follow-up.
Jill, those are great stories and so helpful to people, I think, both perhaps other medical practices as well as so many patients and so many parents, since you're a pediatrician, who have fears about taking their kids back to the doctor and to understand what's going on in what sounds like a really high-quality practice like yours. Thank you very much for calling in.
Jill, could you possibly leave your contact numbers? I'd like to get back in touch with you. We're writing about telemedicine right now, and I'd like to continue
the
conversation.
Sure, and so I did want to comment on your last listener, because we use the Doxy platform, and I have never heard from a patient that they have to consent to having it recorded by Chrome or anything like that. So I don't know if that was a settings issue or whatnot, but we use Doxy.me, and it has worked really well for our practice. And yes, I'm happy to leave my contact information.
All right, so we're going to put you on hold, and we'll get that off the air, of course. And this is WNYC FM HD and AM New York, WNJT FM 88.1 Trenton, WNJP 88.5 Sussex, WNJY 89.3 Netcong, and WNJO 90.3 Toms River. We are New York and New Jersey Public Radio. As we have a few more minutes, finishing up with Caroline Lewis, who's a contributor to Gothamist in conjunction with Jeannie Pinder, founder and CEO of Clear Health Costs, which monitors what people really pay for healthcare, and they've been looking at the effects on medical practices as well as patients during COVID-19 with respect to other kinds of things. And Caroline, I wonder if you want to comment on that last call, since one of your main sources in your Gothamist article was a different pediatrics practice, South Slope Pediatrics in Brooklyn, which went down so far in its patient load that they had to start a GoFundMe page, you report.
Right. I think that what she said, picked up from that was that there's a lot of work doctors' offices are doing to both put safety protocols in place and communicate with patients, you know, what their safety protocols are. In the case of South Slope Pediatrics, they're actually not doing any in-person visits with sick patients, only virtual visits. And a lot of other practices also told me they're screening out sick patients to just do wellness visits in person. And I think at this point, that's one of the big challenges to getting patients to feel safe getting medical care again and to know when and how and where. It's just that level of communication. The head of the Medical Society of the State of New York has said that there should be some kind of PSA letting patients know it's safe to go back. But I think some of the doctors I spoke to were a little more cautious, you know, and are sort of trying to communicate with patients on their own about what the situation is in their offices.
And Jeannie, as we finish up here, a last word maybe on what your data is revealing about the effects on public health and the effects on medical practices. I know I've heard from other kinds of practices than we've talked about in this conversation so far. Imaging places like for MRIs where they were afraid they would have to close because their patient load fell off a cliff. Physical therapists, other things like that. And from the patient standpoint, you know, potential outcomes of having heart attacks and strokes and worsening cancer or whatever the things are because you weren't going in for the care you would have gotten.
Yeah, we're hearing that so much from doctors. It's almost like there's only one thing that people are worried about right now, only one topic, and that's COVID-19. That doesn't mean that your diabetes goes away, that your hypertension and all of your other health problems go away. So the doctors that we're talking to who are seeing this huge sag in non-COVID care are really concerned that there will be downstream consequences for public health that can't fully be predicted and can only be imagined, but that could be really dire. Coupled with the fact that even if people feel like they might want to go back to the doctor's office, maybe they lost their insurance, they lost their job, they don't have the money.
So you have this sort of double whammy that will certainly have an effect on public health and individuals' health.
So how do you want listeners to contribute to this? Because I know that's part of what Clear Health Costs does. You collect stories or you collect data from listeners so that you can help put together a clearer picture for your Clear Health Costs reports. Do you want people to submit to you in any particular way?
We can. We'd love to have emails, healthcosts@wnyc.org. And also we have a form that people can fill out that is at the bottom of Caroline's stories. Caroline, what is the URL for that? Is it Gothamist?
So people can read the coverage that I do through PriceCheck NYC at gothamist.com/healthcost. And at the bottom of every story, there's a place where people can submit medical bills. But in general, I've spoken to a lot of doctors so far about how they're being impacted by people skipping care. And I really want to hear from patients as well, and also hear about their, whether they're able to access the care that they need right now. We always love hearing about shady medical bills, too. So you can email us at healthcosts@wnyc.org. We want to hear, about the topics we've discussed today, but also just anything shady happening in the in your healthcare, because there's really no shortage of that.
Great. And you're performing such a service, and there's so much demand for it. There's, a full board of calls of people who we're not going to be able to get to after the callers that we were able to get to. So we're going to bring you back on Monday, our next live show, for a little more of your reporting, Clear Health Costs and Gothamist. Jeannie and Caroline will be back on Monday for a look at how insurance is working under these new circumstances. Promises have been made about no costs to patients for COVID care by the president and others. Are they being kept? So we'll talk about that and more on Monday with Jeannie Pinder from Clear Health Costs, CEO of Clear Health Costs, and Caroline Lewis, who's reporting in conjunction with Jeannie's work and placing stories on Gothamist. Thanks. Talk to you Monday.
Thank you.
Thank you.